Servos, and welcome to another episode of the Pro Hockey Pod, episode 44. Like always, we're currently on the road right now. Got a game tomorrow in Ingolstadt, so no better place to bang out an episode than in a hotel. Excuse the curtains behind us. The only view in my room that worked. But this week, got a guy that has been in the double for a couple of years now, had a lot of success. Major junior route, so a little change from some of the college guys I've had on recently. You know, found his way through European hockey, played in a lot of pro leagues, and, you know, got to know him a bit this year. Pretty good guy. Very good COD player as well. Welcome to the podcast, Jordan Murray.
Thanks for having me.
Man, it's good to get this going. We always like to kind of take it back to kind of where it started for you. So born in Riverview, New Brunswick there, I believe. I was doing research because I was trying to see like how far it was, but it's literally like right beside Moncton.
Yeah, it's just, so Moncton is kind of, I would say 70% English and 30% French. Mm-hmm. And then Riverview would be the English, like strictly English suburb of the two. So yeah, I grew up in Riverview. Still spend my summers there. Still have all my parents, my grandfather still live there. All my buddies are there. So yeah, it's definitely home.
I wanted to Google where it was, and it was like, I went on Google Maps and it's like 7 minutes from Moncton, and I'm like, man, is this like just like a suburb or like what is this? Like,
honestly, there's just a river. It's not a very nice river. It's brown. It's kind of muddy, but yeah, there's two bridges in and out between Moncton and Riverview, and it's not even 7 minutes to get across the bridge. It's 5 minutes at the most.
It's all good.
Yeah, it's close.
It's home though. What's your earliest like kind of childhood memory you have from there?
I mean, going back, it would be definitely, my grandfather always had in his backyard, he would always build me a rink in the winters. And that would be probably my earliest memory, would be out skating with him in the backyard. And then, yeah, probably just that and, you know, hanging out with my buddies, the guys that I still hang out with to this day.
So would you say then, like, another question I always like to ask is kind of what drew you to the sport of hockey? Like, did you think like your grandfather then would have had a big influence on that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, every Saturday it was watching Hockey Night in Canada with him. You know, he was the one that always took me to the practices, games. We traveled all over together. And I mean, just any Canadian kid growing up, especially a boy, you probably played hockey at some point in your life. So, I mean, yeah, it was just found a love for the game at an early age and have loved it ever since.
Hockey Night in Canada, the old Don Cherry coach.
Oh, yeah. Loved it.
That's every Canadian's childhood memory, I think, mm-hmm. who likes hockey. Mm-hmm. What made you want to be a defenseman? I'm always curious, like, kind of how guys pick their position.
I actually have, like, probably a different story than most. I was always a forward until I think I was 16 years old, and I got cut from the midget AAA team in Moncton, and I was playing, it was called midget minor. So it was kind of like midget AA, and played there for 2 seasons. And the midget AAA team actually qualified for the TELUS Cup, which is the national midget, national championship. Mm-hmm. And they had a few injuries. So they called me up and they asked if I'd ever played defense before. And I was like, no, but I mean, I'll give it a try. And then played in the TELUS Cup, played defense. And then the coach, he was coming back the following season. He said, we really like you on defense. Would you be willing to switch next season? And I was like, yeah, for sure. Like, if I can make the team. So then switched to D that next year. And then signed with the Quebec Ramparts in the queue, and then went to their training camp and as a defenseman. Then I got traded to the Bathurst Teton and played forward that year at 18, 19 switched back to D, and then ever since then been a defenseman.
It's a pretty crazy story. Forgot to tell you before, you don't need to buzz ahead so far. You've just covered half your junior career there.
Bad. That's my mistake.
But no, that's really interesting. So basically your whole minor hockey career, you were a forward there. You guys had I was just noticing by like looking you up quickly on Elite Prospects with the minor hockey. You had two different like teams there in Moncton. Like there was the Flyers and something else.
Yeah. Or? So the Flyers it's different now. I think it's like they call it U18, but at the time it was just Major Midget, which was the Flyers, which was the big midget AAA team in Moncton. And then there was the Moncton Hawks, which is, it was the midget minor team. So it kind of like, I wouldn't say a farm team for them. Like if you got cut from the Flyers, you try out for this midget minor team. And they kind of wanted to use it as like a development league for 15 and 16 year old kids, so that if they did need to call people up to the Flyers, they were able to poach them from that league. And then if you got better, like, you know, at 15, then 16, you could probably make the Flyers. Yeah. So I played there for two years. And then, as a 17-year-old made the midget AAA team.
And then, so with those two, kind of like the midget team and then the farm team, like, were you guys playing, like, did other teams in, like, for the midget, for example, would they all have kind of a similar thing? Like with the same, so like what I mean is, was there two teams in most towns where it was, if you played Moncton midget, you would play these teams, these cities, and then they also would have kind of that double A-ish team for the guys who maybe got cut from that team. Was it similar?
Yeah. So we actually only had four teams in our league in the midget minor. It was us. So Moncton, St. John, New Brunswick, and they had a midget AAA team as well. Fredericton, New Brunswick, they had a midget AAA team as well. And then the third one was a Northern New Brunswick team, and they didn't have a AAA team. So we kind of just played the same teams all the time. And then we would travel around, you know, go to Nova Scotia, PEI, to play those teams as well. But it was only a 4-team league in New Brunswick.
Pretty crazy that. Mm-hmm. Do you guys get to do a lot of like tournaments then too, I'm guessing?
Yeah. Like we would be like, there were, I think we probably every third or fourth week would be either in Nova Scotia or PEI.
Okay.
Playing in tournaments.
Did you guys ever go like east, like more, or I guess that would be west, like more Ontario? West. Yeah.
No, it was all within New Brunswick, PEI, Nova Scotia. Okay. Just because we didn't really have the budget to be going to those big tournaments like the major midget teams would have. But yeah, like we were like, I mean, it wasn't myself, but it was my parents who were, you know, footing the bill for that. And then we had to get sponsors and stuff as well, like put on the back of our jersey
in
order to help out with some of like the costs.
It's crazy the amount of travel, and like we as kids know nothing of it. Like we just take it for granted and think it's normal. And
oh like, yeah, you're just thinking, you know, like I have a hockey game this weekend in this place and my parents are taking me there, and I don't think about how they're having to do it, if they're having to take off work or what plans they're putting to the side. But yeah, you're definitely thankful for them for all those long hours in the rink and all the drives.
And growing up in Moncton too, I think we kind of have similar. I grew up in Peterborough, so obviously the OHL team there, you had the QMJHL team. Like, were you going to a lot of games and stuff at a
Yeah, all the time. Especially with my grandparents. My grandfather, he loves hockey. So we were going to games all the time. And they were obviously a big part of why I loved hockey as well. I mean, I always wanted to play for the Wildcats like when I was a kid, and then obviously never got the chance to do it, but to just play a major junior was a dream come true for me.
I think it's so funny. Like as kids, you think like they're the NHL.
Yeah.
Like watching those guys play. And,
I remember sitting there. We would always go for warm up, whatever 7 o'clock game. My grandfather and I would be there at 6:15 watching the warm up. And I remember telling them like, these guys, like they'd be hitting the crossbar and warm up. Like, yeah, like these guys are so good. They're trying to hit the crossbar and they're actually doing it. And just, yeah, you thought that these guys were the best thing since sliced bread. But, I mean, it was cool. It was awesome having them, in the same city and be able to go to the games.
Mm-hmm. And how was it too for kind of growing up as a young kid out in New Brunswick there? Like, was there a decent amount of like hockey schools you could do in the summer or like skating coaches, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really play much hockey in the summer. I was playing baseball a lot. Tried soccer for a year. Wasn't a fan of it. Didn't like all the running. But I was playing baseball. And then, you know, spending time with my buddy, just acting like a normal kid. And then come usually the beginning of September is when I would kind of get back into hockey. And there's actually a guy, he's from Moncton. He played in the NHL a long time ago. His name's Charlie Bourgeois. He has a pretty big hockey school. It's been around for probably the mid 90s. So that's a big hockey school that I would do that every summer. That would kind of get us back on the ice and then ready for the season.
You brought up a good point there, which I've stressed a lot on this podcast, is kind of having a break from hockey and doing other sports. So like you, I was a big baseball guy, and being a goalie was awesome. Like being a catcher, like for your reactions and stuff, kind of rejuvenates you too. Like you kind of get a break from like hockey's an 8-9 month season, and then baseball is normally like 3-4 months in the summer. What position were you?
I played second base. Kids nowadays, hockey's like a full-time job for them when they're a kid. Like it's almost like you don't get to have a childhood. But for me, it was nice because I got to meet different people, make new friends, guys that maybe weren't playing hockey if they were playing basketball or some other sport during the winter. But it was also a chance for my parents not to have to sit in a rink again all summer and maybe get outside and enjoy some nice weather. But I just love sports, and it didn't matter what sport it was. I guess not soccer, but I just love playing sports. And in the summer, it was just awesome playing baseball.
That's always good. Like, multiple sports is always good. But back to your kind of hockey career there, you end up getting drafted to the MJAHL.
Yeah.
And we'll get another question will come from this, but so that's basically just like a major or a tier two junior league out in that area, or?
Yeah, just a junior A league. I was actually sitting in my buddy's basement. I think we were, I don't know what we were doing, probably playing video games or something. And there was three of us down there. And then my other friend, Nick Smith, we were both supposed to get drafted, and he was on the computer just refreshing the draft. And we both ended up getting drafted. I mean, I only think I played one game there with them, one or two. But yeah, it was first and last time I ever got drafted. So it was kind of cool to be sitting in my buddy's basement for it. But yeah, it's just a junior A league out east. Like, they compete for the, like, Fred Page, and I'm not sure. Is that the national championship for?
Well, no, there's the, I think it's the RBC. RBC is the national.
Fred Page, I think, is the.
It's the one before, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so they compete for that. But yeah, I didn't end up really playing many games for them.
It's weird that, like, tier two, like, leagues have drafts. Like, obviously the three major junior ones, yeah. And then like the USHL are a little more famous ones. But it's weird that, like, they would need to, like, select guys. Like, normally you just have tryouts or something, and at least in Ontario.
Yeah, they had like a territorial draft where they would pick guys from close to them, like whatever, like, city, yeah, or the surrounding area. And then, yeah, they had, like, I think it was like a 12 round draft where they were picking kids from all over the Maritimes. But yeah, I think I was like eighth or ninth round or something like that. But yeah, it's different for sure. I'm pretty sure they still have the draft as well.
Yeah.
But that team's no longer a team anymore in Dieppe.
I was going to say the Dieppe Commandos were their team name. We're not going to see a number 8 Murray jersey hanging in the rafters.
No, not anytime soon.
But another thing that kind of, like, I noticed from your career, like, you brought up earlier when you were getting called up to that, like, midget team, you ended up playing, I believe, 2 years in midget, and then you made the jump to major junior there. Mm-hmm. So kind of when you're going through that at that age, you know, you had mentioned your dream was still to play if it was for Moncton or in the QMJHL major junior, but had there ever been another thought of, hey, what about the other route, like kind of NCAA? Because a lot of guys, when they get to a certain age, you know, because you've burned some years of not being able to play the major junior route because you only have that 5-year eligibility, like, they sometimes focus elsewhere.
Honestly, I had never even thought about playing NCAA hockey. It had never come across, like, myself or my family's radar. And honestly, just because I don't think I was very good when I was younger, so I wasn't really getting recruited or anything. And then just had that one good year of the last year of midget, and you know, a couple of like QMJHL teams came knocking, so that was my main focus from then on.
So who'd you sign with originally?
The Quebec Ramparts.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you would have gone to, you would have been invited to a camp, I'm assuming, and then?
Yeah. So I went to their training camp. It was actually kind of nice. So I played my last year of midget, which would have been, I was 17 years old, and then I got to finish high school and graduate with all my friends. And then that summer was the summer I was leaving. You know, everyone's kind of going off to university or wherever they're going. And I was going off to Quebec City for training camp. I think we were there for probably 2 weeks before we played our first exhibition game, and I was on the ice for a morning skate. We were about to play the Chicoutimi Saguenay, I think their name is, and we're doing like the Indy 500, starting warm-up or morning skate, and Patrick Waugh was the coach then, and he wasn't on the ice yet, and I was skating by the bench, and he called me over, and he said, like, come here for a second, pulled me off, and was like, you know, we think you can play in this league. We're going to have a really deep team here this year. So if you were to be on this team, you would probably be the 8th or 9th defenseman. But we think you can play. So we traded you, and they traded me to Bathurst, New Brunswick, which is like a small little town in northern New Brunswick. But I mean, for me, it was nice. It was 2.5 hours away from home, whereas Quebec City was probably 8 hours away. So then, yeah, I took my gear off, hopped in the car with my grandfather, and we drove back to Moncton. And then that next day, Bathurst was in Moncton playing an exhibition game. So that was my first game in my hometown.
Just right away, yeah. In with the boys, and then on the bus back to...
Like, I stayed at home that night, and then went to the rink that I would have played mid to AAA in, met all the guys there, and then played the game with them, and then hopped on the bus back to Bathurst.
Pretty crazy story. I was going to ask you, like, it wouldn't have been too much, but did you have like much interaction with Wah when you were there for those 2 weeks, like him as a coach?
So actually my year in midget, it's kind of a cool story. I was sitting in a high school class, and I think it would have been my probably second year of having a cell phone. And my phone was just ringing and ringing and ringing. And obviously you're not allowed to answer your phone in class. So I just kept hitting ignore. And then finally I told my teacher, I was like, hey, like, I gotta go. Like something's going on here. Like someone's calling me. So I went in the hallway and answered to my mom. It was my mom. And she said that like the secretary for the Ramparts had called her, and that they were coming through Moncton. They were on their way to Cape Breton, which is in Nova Scotia. Mm-hmm. So they had to pass through Moncton, and they wanted to pick me up and take me with them for the trip. So that was my first interaction with him, and it was extremely intimidating, and obviously getting in front on the bus and meeting all these new guys. But it was kind of like a nice little intro to him and the QMJHL lifestyle. And then, the next year I just, kind of said hello to him and tried to stay out of his way until,
hello
until
and then goodbye.
Yeah, and then he told me he traded me, and that was that.
Oh, that's funny, but that's a cool story about being in school there. Mm-hmm. Kind of early experience. Did you think or feel maybe, eventually when you get settled there in Bathurst, as I said, I believe you're around 18 years old. Did you feel going later might have helped you, like with the jump?
I mean, I personally think so. Yeah. I mean, selfishly, it was awesome because I got to graduate with all my friends and finish high school at home and, just live at home while I was finishing school. And then to make that jump, I mean, obviously I wasn't very mature, but I was a little bit more mature than I would have been if I was, 15, 16, leaving home. And then obviously being close to home, whereas my parents were up to every game. Whenever we got days off, I could drive home. So that was pretty nice to be able to still be close to my family, but still kind of have that distance where I was growing up a little bit. But, mm-hmm. And I had great billets in Bathurst. They're great people. Still talk to them. And they were like a second family to me. So yeah, it was nice to be able to, finish it and then, go to the queue at 18.
That's always a big adjustment too for some guys, because as you said, you're used to living at home and then you're kind of thrown in with this random family, and most billet families are awesome because they've done it before. Mm-hmm. But were you nervous at all kind of leaving home at 18?
I mean, for me, it was obviously my dream was to play in the queue. So I was excited to do it. But yeah, it was definitely a little bit nerve-wracking because this family was French, because Bathurst is a French community. Mm-hmm. So they were French, but they could speak English as well. But yeah, it was definitely nerve wracking at first, but they made the transition super easy. They were very outgoing, they're fun people, and they're great people all around.
How's your French?
I can speak it. I graduated bilingual because New Brunswick is technically the only bilingual province. Mm-hmm. French immersion is offered and kind of like encouraged for you to take it. So yeah, since grade one all the way to grade 12, I did all of my schooling like in French, which has its pros and its cons, but I should be able to speak French. Yes.
Judging from my degree, I should be able to do that,
but I can't really. When I was younger, I definitely could, but now I just kind of lost it a little bit. I can understand it, but, speaking, it's a little bit more difficult.
And how's the Quebec League? Cause obviously myself coming from Ontario, we're familiarized with the Ontario Hockey League. And then you kind of only see or hear about the Q kind of during playoffs and when it gets to the Mem Cup time, like mm-hmm. whatever team has made it or wherever that's being hosted. But, how was that league for you? I know too, kind of back then, like when we were growing up, it was still like you had a lot of like some guys who could throw knucks in that league too, but you also had some very, very skilled players. Like, mm-hmm. would you say the experience is pretty similar?
Yeah. I mean, even to this day, everyone says it's the softest league out of the three, but, There were some tough guys, but then there was also some highly skilled guys. I mean, I played against McKinnon, Drouin. Mm-hmm. Sean Couturier was another guy that dominated that league when I was there. It was at that point in my life, obviously the highest level hockey I'd ever played. So I was just trying to survive the first couple of years.
Good fan support in that league too. Like you go everywhere, there's good fans for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part in Bathurst, we didn't have the best fan support. They didn't really like the owner that was the owner of our team at the time in Bathurst. But I mean, there were some games, especially if we get a snowstorm or something, there'd be 200-300 people in the stands. But when you go to the other rinks, you get good fans. So that was nice.
Road games were the best.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. And I noticed too, just by kind of looking at your roster there, your second year that you end up playing with two German guys who now we play against, I believe Kramer and Hoffman.
Yeah.
How was the adjustment for them? Because, you know, obviously in Germany, their second language in school would be English. So I feel like going somewhere where there's French too, like that might be like kind of tough for them.
For the most part, because you do have guys that can only speak English. Like we had a couple guys from Newfoundland on our team and there's no chance that those guys are speaking French. They can barely speak English. But so all the coaches and everything, they all practice and everything like that was in English.
Okay.
But Hoffman had spent a year in Quebec City, like playing for the Ramparts. So I think he was a little bit more adjusted. And then for Kramer coming over, I think having Hoff there really helped him because obviously two German guys.
Yeah.
But those guys they're still great dudes now, but back then they were great guys. I got along with both of them really well. And yeah, actually it's kind of funny how you come all the way over to their country and play against them now. So it's pretty cool.
End up playing one of them tomorrow. So,
yeah, exactly.
No, that's pretty cool. And you end up spending 2 years there in Bathurst, and then I believe you get traded to Drummondville.
Yep.
I have to say, we talked this off camera. I still can't remember what tournament it was, but at some point I played a tournament there.
Yeah.
That rink was cool because it was like older, like the seats were kind of the way they were set up. It feels like the fans are right on top of you, had like that French feel to me, I guess.
Yep.
But they obviously a very like historic team too, like very known in that league. I think a couple years before they had been in the Mem Cup.
Yep. Yeah. I think that would have been 2010 that they went to the Mem Cup.
They went out 08 as well. I know 08, that. Yeah.
Great rink. I mean, the visitors bench, they have glass around it, but the home bench, it's the end of the bench is here. And then right there is the fans. There's nothing in between behind you as well. There's no glass or anything behind the bench. So yeah, it's almost like you're sitting in with the fans, but yeah, it's a great rink. We actually had great fans there too. Great bunch of dudes there as well. Still talk to a few guys from that team.
Did one of them have easier travel? Like I'm not so familiar where they're like located. Like was one, or is it similar in both?
Drummondville was pretty easy travel.
Yeah.
Just because all the teams in Quebec are so central. I mean, there is a few teams like Baie-Comeau's in the middle of nowhere, Rouyn-Noranda and Val-d'Or. Those teams are way up north. But in the Maritimes, our closest game, like in New Brunswick, our closest game was Moncton 2.5 hours. And then after that, it was at least 5 hours everywhere else.
Mm.
But in Quebec, like in Drummondville, we would be, we were an hour and a half away from Montreal, and then there was probably three or four teams around there, and then Quebec City was 2 hours the other way, so we were pretty central, which was very nice.
I remember like there's like a website you can look at and it shows like all the current major junior ranks and all their old ones, and looking at Rouyn-Noranda's, it was like 1200, and I'm like looking at this thing, I'm like, how do they like have fans every game? Because it's so, it was like two rows of seats on like every side.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it was for my last year that they redid it, and they had one end that was probably 30 rows of seats. But yeah, before that, maybe 500 people in there for games, and those boards were like getting hit into concrete too. Like they had no give to them. But yeah, I mean, looking back, some of those junior rinks are so fun to play in. Like the fans are right on top of you, and you're a young, naive kid, and people are swearing at you, throwing stuff at you. So it's pretty fun.
It's a good atmosphere to grow up in. And I've said this before, your logo was cool in Drummondville, the Voltigeurs.
Great logo,
like
yeah.
It's very unique.
We had black jerseys too, and it had a big sword up the middle of it. Yeah. Those were cool jerseys. I think I still have it at home, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, you get colors, black, red, and silver, I think.
Yep, yeah, exactly.
That was cool. So then after that was kind of the end of your major junior career. And you, along with many other people, they have to make a big decision. Mm-hmm. So I need to ask this first before I get to my question. Was the rule still when you were playing, or had it come yet, where you could play 1 year of pro before burning your eligibility for school, or would that come later?
No, that was still there.
It was still there.
So you could actually play a half a season up until Christmas of pro.
Okay.
And then join a university team without losing any eligibility at all. Like you could hop right in and play. But I had no offers or anything. And it was actually funny. Like UNB was the only, I don't know if you want me to talk about that yet, but like UMB was the first team that you know tried to recruit me, and I on my first recruiting trip they were like, so what are your plans for the summer? And I was like, well, I'm moving to Fredericton and probably going to work the hockey camps for you guys. So they kind of knew right there that I was committed. And I mean, Fredericton, New Brunswick is an hour and a half away from home, so it was easy decision for me to go there.
Well, it's a very astound hockey program too. Yeah. in CIS, or U Sports as they call it now. But so is that what they do then? Like a lot of guys who maybe are new to going to school there or going to school there, they have hockey camps every summer that they can work as well?
Yeah, actually UNB, it was started by Gardner McDougall, who's the coach there now, and then a guy named Roger Shannon. They started a spring league team called the V-Reds Prospects. And then from that, they kind of just built this empire of hockey camps and spring league teams that just travel all over the world, really, because they'll come to Europe sometimes. They'll play in Montreal at the Meltdown. They'll go down to the States. So they get the guys that play on UNB, if they want to stay for the summer, you know, and do intercession or just stay there and work out, because Fredericton's a great spot in the summer. You can run these camps all summer and you know, it's nice. You're at the rink with a lot of the boys that you're playing with, and working with kids is pretty fun too. So yeah, they pay you for that and you get to work the camps.
Yeah. And I want to ask you too, like, obviously someone who's never, and for maybe the listeners out there who might be thinking of going the youth sports route, like, what is University of New Brunswick like the town, obviously the campus, all that stuff, the fun stuff too, that a lot of people, you know, don't want to mention, but it's a big reason of, you know, where you go to university sometimes. Like, just how was the overall experience for you?
Fredericton is a great city. Besides Halifax, it's probably one of the best cities in the Maritimes. There's two universities there. So like UNB and then St. Thomas, they share a campus. And then there's another community college there, like NBCC, New Brunswick Community College. And they're all pretty much on the exact same campus. So it's nice. You have all the students there and a few campus bars. And then obviously the downtown in Fredericton, it's right on a river. It's called the St. John River. It runs pretty much all the way up through New Brunswick. So it's right on the river, and downtown in the summer is bumping. And obviously in the winter too, it's a pretty happening spot.
No, it's a big reason why you go to university. You want to
Both worlds.
I say everyone, it's 4 years or 5 years of bubble life, like a fake life.
Yeah, it is.
When you get out, whether you go pro or whether you go right in the work world, like, there's nothing like it. So
you have no responsibilities besides school. You can go out any night of the week you want. You can, yeah, there's lots of opportunity there, that's for sure.
And they take care of you too. Like, they kind of, like, you know, you're one of their own. So I'd say most schools take care of a lot of their guys. But you end up playing with one guy we talked about before on the one bus ride, a buddy of mine, David Chance, the 1 year.
Chancey.
Okay. And this guy, like, we talked about it on the bus too. Like, he had such a, I remember him. I met him one time when I was like 15 years old and a goalie star, and he had just made the OHL. And, you know, watching him get drafted and go on his pro career and then not play for like 4 years and then just show up at New Brunswick and just put up numbers, like, you know. So, you know, obviously he was a good guy, good goalie, but you know, the truck story would be funny to share, I think.
Yeah, I mean, him coming in was still one of the funnier moments. I mean, he was telling us stories about like Ed Belfour when he was in Florida, like, just the guy had tons of stories. But there was five of us that lived together, and it was kind of the party house, and we would always tell the boys. We wouldn't even really have to tell them. Saturday night, we rarely lost at home, so every Saturday, guys would already have their beers and their outfits picked out for the night, and it would always be everyone meet up at our place, and we'd always tell Chancey, you know, you're welcome to come for a beer. Like, you could bring your wife. They actually had a baby at a time, so and Chancey would always say, yeah, like, I'm down. I'll be there, boys. And he would stop by for two or three beer, and then he'd be like, all right, like, I got to run. Like, my wife, my baby, and our dog are sitting in the truck, and he just had the truck that had the bench seat in the front, so the dog, the baby, his wife are all just waiting in the car, and he's inside having beers with us. But yeah, he was a great dude, and lots of good times with him.
He was a good goalie too. Like, I did a lot of camps with him, and, you know, he was far ahead of a lot of guys probably around his age, and, you know, obviously had a good pro career, and even as I said, he took time off, came back, and still was able to go to the coast after. But no, good for him for getting his degree too. I think that's a big reason why he came back.
Yeah, definitely, to get his degree and then to be able to play for one of the best programs in Canada was cherry on top.
And speaking of that, like, there's a stigma, I would say, when you talk to maybe people who aren't so associated with U sports, is, you know, a lot of people, they compare it to NCAA, and, well, NCAA is light years ahead of U sports, and if you go U sports, that means, you know, your career is done. And you know, I tell these people, you know, 15 years ago I could see, you know, maybe that argument, but now it's like, I'd say they're pretty even. Like, there's a lot of good players who end up going U Sports, they get their degree done, they have a good time, and then they end up signing places after. So like, how was your experience with the hockey itself?
I mean, you at UNB, you get treated just as well as any pro team that I've been on. I mean, this one that we're on right now is probably the cream of the crop, but yeah, they make that place as professional as possible. They give you every resource that you could possibly have. And then, I mean, obviously their pedigree of winning is second to none right now. But yeah, I mean, we would go down every year for preseason rather than play teams in our league. We would go down and play NCAA teams. And we, not only would we compete, for the most part, we beat them. And then even when Portland had an AHL team, the Portland Pirates, like my first year, we went down there and we beat them. I mean, they still had guys that were not, it wasn't their full team, but still it was guys that were playing pro. And we went down and we beat them. So like, I mean, our team could compete with some of the best teams. And yeah, just people underlook that league. I think now it's becoming more and more relevant in the hockey world. But yeah, for the longest time, it was, you're going to U Sports after these 4 years, you're pretty much done hockey. But that's changing now.
Would you have played Schwartzy then? Because he was in Portland for a bit.
So Schwartzy played UNB the year before I got there. Because I think then it was the Coyotes at the time. So then the Coyotes went, they moved their team to Springfield. And then when I played them, Portland was Florida's team.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say that would have been hilarious.
Yeah, it would have been so funny.
Bring that up. Yeah. Suck on that sword. She just whacked you. No, that's cool. And what, like, obviously I went the NCAA route, so I'm curious, like, what teams did you guys end up playing? Like, go play?
We always played the East Coast teams. So Boston College, Maine, BU. We played Harvard 1 year. And actually, my first year, we took a 10-day trip, went to Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
We played Colorado College, Denver, and Air Force. And that was an awesome trip. Got to go to I think it was a Rockies game. Well, yeah, the Rockies and then Avs game as well.
Nice.
Yeah, it was cool.
That Air Force, I think would just be a different experience because obviously they are so like everything's on a schedule and just like they're obviously it's awesome for them to play hockey, but they're there for another reason, a much bigger reason. You know?
Yeah, I mean, and even getting onto that campus was like going through border security.
Oh yeah,
they came on with, you know, dogs and everything and checked our passports. We all had to get off the bus. And then once you're in there, it was honestly just like being on a military base. And then they weren't the best hockey team, but they worked hard and they were physical and they all had shaved heads and, you know, but, yeah, it was a great experience.
Yeah. When I went to school, we played against Army.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. Like, not the most talented team, but no one will work harder than them.
No, they fly around.
And the funny thing is, like, they're playing a game against you at 7 at night, and they've probably also already worked out and done whatever else during the day, and you've been in your bed just napping.
Just like, straight chilling, yeah.
lots of respect for those guys and obviously what they do. Definitely. So you end up playing 4 years there. What'd you end up majoring with?
Just a business degree, yeah.
The generic business degree, I follow you there. That's a good one.
Just get degrees, bud.
I tell people this all the time. Like, you know, whether you're 21 or 18, like to go to a school and pick a degree like off the bat is tough. I'm not sure how it goes in Canadian university if you have to pick right away, but like in the US, like you pick your program right away, and then if you have to change after year one or year two, like you're hoping that some of the credits you took like can match for the next one, or you're gonna have to make up ground and do summer school. But yeah, business degree, I mean, you can use it basically anywhere. And
yeah, I mean, it's just great to have that degree. But kind of like you said, you're so young at 18 years old to be picking basically your entire future. I mean, I was never much of a school guy to begin with. So it was a struggle for me. But I mean, yeah, thank God. Thank God we got it, because I wouldn't want to go back and do it now.
I was saying that, like, looking back, I'm like, I loved college, but I don't think I'd do the school again. Like,
yeah. School was awesome, minus school.
Minus the actual work.
We actually had a like 2.5 week strike when I was at UMB, and that was the best time of, that was the best part of university.
Teachers went on strike?
Teachers went on strike, yeah. So the entire like school
was closed. I can't deal with this Murray kid anymore. Yeah,
sick of my shit.
That's funny. No, but so a question I had was when you finish your 4 years there, obviously CAS, you're allowed to stay five. Like, kind of what was your decision to go pro instead of doing a fifth year? You just, as you said, you had your degree. There was no thought of maybe a master's or anything. You just kind of wanted to move on.
Yeah. And well, I was sick of school for number one. And we had just won back-to-back national championships. And kind of all the guys that my entire class, everyone was leaving. And we just personally, I had a great year, and our team, we won. So stock couldn't have been higher. And yeah, it was just, I think, the right time. And our coach did a great job, you know, of finding me a spot to go. And yeah, really, really happy for my time there, but it was the time for me to leave.
And kind of the perfect like ending too, you know, as you said, you end up winning back-to-back championships. Mm-hmm. That must have been, can only imagine the aftermath of that both times. Yeah, but no, but just like, you know, you get there and you're young and you're building up to something. And I think for you, it obviously is probably a very good honor to say, yeah, we won our last 2 years, and kind of guys that you spent the 3-4 years with in terms of like class or like the class ahead of you that you spent a lot of time with, you get to share those memories. But, you know, when you're moving on, you know, someone like yourself, you end up signing in Binnington there at the end of the year. But, were you, at this point, did you have an agent? Like, were you talking to other teams, or was this something strictly done just through your coach?
I did have an agent, but I mean, at school, I didn't really talk to them. I think they had gotten me a development camp when I was at school. And then honestly, at that last year, I had talked to a couple coast teams and I was ready to go to the coast. And our coach said, you're not, like, I'm not letting you go to the coast. He was very, very stern about that. And he's like, just wait. Cause everyone else had, a few other guys had gone to the coast. A couple guys had gone to the American League, and I was kind of one of the last ones to go. And he said, like, you're not going to the coast. Like, I think that you should probably try to go to the American League, and waited the extra couple days. And he ended up getting me to Binghamton. And then, I mean, the rest is history there. So I'm glad I listened to him there.
No, that's, you know, some guys obviously just want to like get somewhere and start playing. And it's sometimes it's, you know, got to wait for the right opportunity, like yourself did. Were you nervous at all making that jump? Because obviously that's, you know, when we're talking about the AHL, you know, you're fresh from college, you're 24, 25 years old. And, you know, this is the level right below the NHL. Like, it's a high league. Like, you know, were you nervous going there, or you felt like you were ready for that challenge?
I was so fucking nervous. That was the most, I don't really get nervous playing hockey too often, but that first game was the most nervous I've ever been for a game. Just especially coming from CIS, I didn't really ever know if I was going to have that opportunity. And just in my mind was like, just don't screw this up. Do not screw this up. Like, you got this chance, like, make the best of it. And I think I ended up playing 5 games at the end of the season with Binghamton, and earned a 2-year AHL deal with, actually, that was the last year that the Sens were in Binghamton. We moved to Belleville. So it was a 2-year contract with Belleville. And yeah, I guess I didn't really screw it up.
No, obviously you earned that contract. And that first year, I think, is cool to talk about, your first full year, I'll say, when you guys went to Belleville, because you end up going down as well to the coast there in beautiful Brampton. Bramadesh, as they say. And that rink is so fine to me. Like, they've tried to put so many teams in there, and they always have hope, and it just, for some reason, doesn't work. But I know a lot of guys who played in Brampton, both OHL and East Coast. But, you know, that first year, obviously, as I said, kind of a little bit up and down, but you end up solidifying yourself in the AHL there. But, you know, was it kind of motivation then, like, when you would get sent down, like, to kind of get back up, like, kind of fuel the fire? Like, hey, you know, I've played in the AHL, for example, I've proven I can play, you know, this isn't where I'm going to stay. I'm getting back up there as soon as possible.
Yeah. So for me, it wasn't really performance based. It was, we had Thomas Chabot in the American League. So he, with him down, it made us have 9 defensemen, and obviously he's 20 times better than I was, but we both kind of had similar roles on the team. So when he was there, it was just like, sorry, Murr, like, you're not playing. Like, Shabby's getting all these opportunities, and I don't blame Ottawa one bit for that. He was their first rounder, like the face of their franchise. And it was, I hadn't played in like 2 weeks. And they had planned for Shabby to get called up soon. So they just said, like, hey, we're going to send you down for, I think it was like a week that I was down in the coast. They're going to send you down, and then when he goes back up, you'll be right back up. So that's what it was. Went to Brampton. We took a 24-hour bus ride from Brampton to Rapid City and actually had a blast on it. It was a great time. And then, yeah, after that, it was back up to the American League.
I never understood why they had a team there, because, like, and like the division they'd play in, like, their closest was like Kalamazoo or something. Yeah, like it was
Adirondack or something like that. Like, yeah, it was a weird spot for a team, but I mean, close to Belleville, which was nice if ever you did get sent down. But
I guess they would go in stretches too. Like they'd have like a 10-day like away trip and then be home for like a couple weekends.
And they had the sleeper bus, which I mean, obviously being on the bus isn't the best thing, but if you got that sleeper bus and you can get a bunk, it's not too bad.
A couple cards as well, I'm assuming. Yeah,
cards, a few beers. It wasn't too bad.
Not a bad league in the cheese toast.
Nope.
No, another thing that was kind of cool, you end up playing 3 years there, I believe, in Belleville. Mm-hmm. And you end up meeting some guys that I know a little bit. Obviously, one we're playing with now, Schwartzy.
Yep. Captain Swizz.
Play with him, Swizz. You know, how was he as a teammate? Because obviously at this point, I believe he was, I'm going off memory here, he would have been in probably year six of pro or year seven maybe of kind of the AHL grind. And the thing with him, and I talked about on his episode too, was like he was always a guy known for his work ethic and his kind of grit play and could play in any zone. Mm-hmm. And he just, you know, whatever it was, like he could do it at the AHL level and just like, whenever he got to the NHL, like he wasn't really given the chances I think other guys have given, but you know, obviously a leader as well. But how was it, you know, meeting him?
It was awesome. I mean, and he's still the exact same guy now that he was back then too, just minus the kid. But he's a great dude. I mean, you know him just as well, longer than I've known him, but great guy in the dressing room, great guy on the ice, great leader. Will do anything for his team, and he's just honestly a great all-around hockey player. Can bring it in all three zones. Him and I, we've had a lot of fun playing together the 2 years that we've played together. But yeah, he's just a great dude all around.
Yeah, he definitely is. Another guy you played with a little bit there, and a buddy, like more of a buddy of his, I'd say, but I trained with him together as well, was Stuart Percy.
The Stu, he's a great dude too. Him and I got along really well.
Were you guys D partners?
Yeah, for a little bit, yeah. And then Stewie actually dislocated his elbow one time and he was coming back from it. We actually had I think it was a Christmas party at Swarzy's house, and Stewie and I would always wrestle when we had a couple drinks, and he was still coming back from this dislocated elbow, and I was kind of fooling around with him, and then I ended up twisting his arm or something. So he said that I hurt his elbow, and I was calling him a pussy, saying that his elbow wasn't hurt. And then he ended up getting pretty pissed off and he punched me in the face. And then I knew that like I had actually hurt him. So then I was like apologizing to him. And then he felt really bad too. And then the whole time Swarzy's just sitting there dying, laughing at us. And, but I mean, I never held it against him. It was my own fault for that happening. But yeah, Stewie's a great dude. And, actually got to see him this summer at a wedding in Nova Scotia. He's got a little baby now too. It's cool to see.
It's crazy that everyone's growing up. Schwartzy, back to that story though. Schwartzy was probably in the background like, did you hear what he called you?
He said you were a pussy, Stu. Hit him again.
Just stirring.
The ultimate pot
just
stirrer.
Just stirring the pot. That guy knows how to do it.
Yeah.
So you end up playing 3 years in Belleville, as I said, and you end up putting up pretty good points, I would say, as a defenseman there. Your last year, I believe you had 34. But what was the overall decision for you to like decide to make the jump to Europe? Because obviously, you know, you'd played 3 years there in the AHL, had been doing well, and not to say, you know, that you couldn't continue to do well there, but you just kind of said, you know what, like, it doesn't look like I'm gonna get a chance, you know, in the NHL, so it might be time to go to Europe.
That's not the reason at all. It was, so that last year in Belleville was the COVID year.
Right,
they stopped the season, I think it was March, and I mean, we had an absolute wagon of a team. Like that year, it was just give Josh Norris or Drake Batherson the puck and get the hell out of the way and get points that way. So I think at that time we were first in the Eastern Conference and we were supposed to get guys back from Ottawa as well. So like we had a good chance of making a run at the Calder Cup. And then obviously COVID got in the way of that. And then that whole summer there were so many question marks around what was going to happen in the American League. And then I was waiting and waiting and waiting. And then it was the end of September and there were still no answers. And then they were talking about cutting pay to like 50% of what guys were supposed to be making. And, Riga in the KHL, they came knocking and asked if I wanted to make the transition over to Europe. So at that point there was so much uncertainty in North America. I said, why the hell not? And hopped on a plane to Riga, Latvia.
You know what? Like, I'm embarrassed that I forgot about that because I talked about this with Schwartzy too. Yeah. But it's like, as crazy as it is that we went through a pandemic like that, you still forget that it actually Like, I'm like looking at your resume and I'm like, oh, like after 19, 20, he just, you know, he went to the KHL. And then in my head, I'm like, you idiot. Like, there was 3 years of COVID that followed that. Yeah.
Like I had no intentions of leaving at that time. Like, I mean, we didn't even get to finish the season that year. And like, I was hopefully going to.
You guys had a wagon too. I remember watching you guys play the Marlies all the time. Yeah. You would wax them.
Yeah. Like we were in the East. It was us and Hershey at the time. And I mean, when we had played them, I think we beat them both times. So like, and we were getting guys back from Ottawa and we had a really good chance. So that was, you know, I mean, you know how it is. If you make a deep playoff run, that usually the salaries go up and the offers will start coming from other teams. So that was my hope at the time. And then obviously that didn't happen because of COVID. And
were you nervous like during the summer there? Because obviously, as you said, there's so much uncertainty and whether the league plays or not is question one. Two, it's fans or not. Three, it's okay, what does that do to our salaries? Like, what's the structure going to be? If another league doesn't play, does that mean like, you know, my role might change or there might not be room somewhere because there's so many guys, right?
I mean, that summer was probably one of my favorite summers because while the rest of the world was pretty much in lockdown, the Maritimes, they did a really good job at the start of COVID of we didn't let anyone in. Like from Quebec into New Brunswick, no one was allowed in. And if you were allowed in, you automatic quarantine. So we had so little cases in New Brunswick, PEI, Nova Scotia, and Newfoundland that probably after like a month of lockdown, they just opened everything back up and you were allowed to travel within the four provinces without any sort of like restrictions or anything like that. And I mean, bars were open, restaurants were open. It was normal life for us. So, I mean, that summer I took full advantage of it. We were traveling around and I mean, I took a couple months off of working out and, you know, just really enjoyed myself for the first time in a while since there was no date of when you had to go back to camp and you had to be ready for the date. It was just kind of like going with the flow. And then, so that summer was a real fun one for me.
You were just that dick on like Instagram or like Snapchat. Like everyone's like, another day of COVID wearing a mask. And Murray's like, look at me.
We're all boys are at the beach, like going to bars and stuff. But yeah, I mean, we were lucky that New Brunswick and all the surrounding provinces did what they did because like we had no cases. But then kind of once they opened up everything again, then all the cases started to come back once we opened up to the rest of the country. But yeah, I mean, for those 3 months where everyone else was in lockdown, I mean, you'd hear stories of like guys in Toronto and Montreal.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You literally couldn't go outside. Like you'd get tickets and we were just living it up like nothing was going on.
I worked that summer and like it was literally like I was one of those guys that like stocked the shelves at like grocery stores with Pepsi products and it was like mask all the time.
Yeah,
I was essential, so I got my like shots early, which is nice. Yeah. But like there was like so many, you can only have so many people in the like there'd be people outside and like waiting for like 2 hours to get in like the lines for the grocery stores. Like it was pretty crazy.
Such a crock of shit.
What a time to be alive.
Oh yeah.
So what that summer then when you ended up deciding to go to Europe, like did you have other offers too other than Riga or was that just kind of like the first like big one that came up and you're like, I'm taking this?
That was the first one really.
Yeah.
They had actually asked me at the end of the previous season of that last year in Belleville if I had any interest in coming and I kind of said straight up told them no, that I wasn't ready to leave North America yet. Mm-hmm. And then they asked again in September and at that time I was like, all right, like I have to go. All I was doing all summer was just spending money. I was like, I gotta go make some money and start playing hockey again. So then it was kind of an easy decision. I know my parents were a little bit worried about going over to Europe, especially when it was a pandemic, but I mean, made the trip over and I mean, it's been pretty good ever since.
Well, I wanted to ask you, cause like, obviously I don't think not many listeners have been to Latvia. Mm-hmm. But obviously playing the KHL, it's obviously the number one league in Europe, probably the second in the world behind the NHL. Like, how was your experience? How was living in Riga there? Obviously, you know, a different country from Russia. I actually played with a couple Latvians when I was playing in France. So they always just talk about home and stuff. But how was the experience for you?
Riga is a absolutely beautiful city. Right on the water. It's got a mix of, you know, the old town and the new town. The Latvian guys that I played with are great dudes, lots to do in the city. And then, you know, once you get into Russia and you get into some of those other cities, it's a bit of a culture shock, but, I have nothing but good things to say about Riga. I mean, that city is, I think besides St. Petersburg, it would be my number two city in Europe that I've been to so far.
Okay. I have to go there one day.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
There was a lot of imports on that team too, I believe. Right.
Yeah. I think because we weren't in Russia, we were allowed to have like 10 or 11, So pretty much half of our team was North American dudes. We had a couple, I think one guy was, we had an Austrian dude, but he was pretty much North American. He was a great guy. So mm-hmm. It was nice to have all the imports.
Were you there when Andrew O'Brien was there?
Yeah, I was there with Obi. Morgan Ellis, he plays on Berlin now. JC Lapon, he plays on Straubing. Yeah. So lots of guys that I still talk to this day.
Obi.
Yeah.
Guys.
Great dude.
me and Schwartz, I have a buddy who played on Calgary and became friends with Monahan. And then it was like, I was like his best friend. And then OB was Monahan.
So
lots of stories of that guy. He's a great dude.
He's a great dude.
I think
absolute wild card.
Man, the funny thing is, like, if you talk to him, you'd be like, this guy can't be serious. But then, like, you know, got a cannon of a shot. I think he went to Norway the 1 year. He set the most penalty minute record in the league. He had like 350 and like
50 points.
Yeah, 350 pims, 50 points in 45 games. Like,
actually, like, so that year in Riga, we actually had a pretty decent team on paper.
Yeah.
And then for us, it was our coach. He was kind of a cocksucker. But once we were pretty much out of playoffs, they just started firing everyone. And Obi went back to Norway that year, I believe. Mm-hmm. And like, they had sponsors like just forking over money to try to get him back on that team. But yeah, he loved it there. I mean, the stories he'd say, so it's a beautiful country. I mean, I haven't had the chance to go, but he loved it.
So that would bring me to my next question then. Is that kind of why you went to Sweden then that year? Because they started selling guys off?
They started buying guys out. And I think it was past a certain date that if they buy you out, they only owe you, I think, 50% of what's remaining on your contract. And if it's after that certain date, they owe you 100%. So we had like a Black Monday type of thing where it was, you know, NFL coaches are getting fired, all the imports got fired, and then we all kind of had to find new teams.
Must be pretty stressful during the season, but you end up going to HV 71 there in the SHL. Mm-hmm. How was it? Like, obviously that's a little change. I think like going to Sweden, obviously a little colder there. Hockey's pretty fast. I've heard from lots of people, but how was your experience there in Sweden? I love Sweden itself, the country. Like, beautiful people were nice to me whenever I was there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Great people. Beautiful country. Wasn't the biggest fan of the style of hockey. It was almost like they could forecheck with the puck on their stick. It was just defense all over. But I mean, when I got there, I think we were in like 8th or 9th spot, and then we won our first 3 games. Then after that, I think we lost like 13 games in a row. And then we ended up in the relegation spot and actually got relegated. So that was...
Oh, you were on that team.
Yeah, it was a tough one. I mean, it's probably like the lowest point of my hockey career. And I mean, we had no fans in the stands. So what I had heard is that place, like HV, whenever there's fans, it's an incredible place to play. So I didn't really get to experience the full Swedish hockey. But I mean, getting relegated really sucked.
Who went up that year?
I don't know who went up. Might have been Modo.
Because I think like the next year they won.
They beat Bjork Loven. Like, they absolutely spent a ton of money to get right away.
Me and Schwartz have one of his close buddies put on Bjork Loven. So that was, I remember watching that final series. But they went down, went up, and then
they're still there now.
Yeah.
I mean, that team had been in the top league since like the 70s. So it was like a huge shock that we got relegated.
It's COVID too. Like, it's a different time.
Like, I didn't really get to experience the full Swedish hockey lifestyle, but it was an all right time.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Can't complain. I mean, you've seen the world, man. Like,
been around, that's for sure.
At the end of the day, been around. Suitcase.
Yeah.
And then that kind of leads you to kind of your journey starting in Germany there. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, that summer, just kind of looking around, and then Wolfsburg came calling, and it just kind of seemed like a good fit.
Yeah, I mean, it was either there or probably try to go back to the coast and work the way back up to the American League. But
so even like the coast, like after you had proven,
I didn't really have too much going on at that point. And then Wolfsburg came, and my goal, once I was to be done finished in North America, was to be like to come to Germany. I've always wanted to try to come play in this league. Couple guys that like older guys that I used to work out with, they played in this league. They loved it. So they kind of always talked it up for me. And then to get into Wolfsburg was like, I think a good stepping stone for me to get my foot in the league. I had 2 great years there. I met a lot of great people there. Not the best city in the world, that's for sure. But great people there. The organization's great. travel wasn't the best, but I have nothing but good things to say about Wolfsburg.
Did you end up, like, so that summer when you went there, had you signed a 2-year deal or did you sign one and then extend another?
I just signed one, and then it was probably middle of January that I had a, like, took a contract extension, because that was actually when the war started. So they, like, people were talking about, you know, all the imports leaving Russia,
okay,
pushing guys out of, like, other leagues. So I kind of panicked. I was like, Jesus, like, am I going to even have a job in this league next year? So I re-signed right away. And then, I mean, hindsight, I probably could have waited a little bit and maybe got an offer elsewhere. But I saying that, I mean, I had a great year last year in Wolfsburg. I mean, we had a good team, great people there. Yeah, so I regret nothing about re-signing in Wolfsburg.
You had a really good start too. I remember that first year, like, you got off the hot start, a very good season. So, I mean, obviously they would have wanted to keep you back. And it's mm-hmm. sometimes it's about that too. Everyone always thinks, yeah, I want to go somewhere, do well, and then move on. But mm-hmm. sometimes it's about being comfortable and, like, being somewhere familiar where, you know, management kind of knows you, the coach mm-hmm. knows you, and then you also know them. It makes mm-hmm. you kind of more comfortable with yep. that playing, instead of going somewhere new every year and trying mm-hmm. to figure it out right away, right?
Yeah, and it was just, you know, nice to not have to pack all my shit up at the end of the season. I left all my stuff in my apartment, and I knew exactly where I was going when I was coming back the next year. And
yeah.
I mean, they pretty much gave me the keys to the castle while I was there too. They put me in every position. They played me, you know, sometimes 35 minutes a game. So, I mean, I had a great time there. Just for myself and my girlfriend, we were just kind of done with, like, I told them last year, like, if I could take this team and move it to a different city, I would like stay here for the rest of my time, but just couldn't really live there mm-hmm. anymore. And I mean, that's part of the business as well, is you have to be happy in your situation. And I mean, the two of us, we weren't the happiest anymore. So it was time for a change.
No, that's true. Cause obviously, you know, you're moving your life over to Europe, and mm-hmm. it's a country where you don't speak the main language, and mm-hmm. you know, you want to be, some people, it is important to be in a city where, you know, there's stuff to do. And mm-hmm. So respect that, man. Like, it's, you know, it's your life. You're only yep. going to have one playing career. Yep. So it's, you know, do what's best for you. While you were there, though, you end up meeting or playing with a couple guys who I know. I'll start off with one, which is kind of random. Anthony Reck.
Oh, Toto. Yeah. Yeah.
So he was playing when I started my pro career. I played 2 years in the top French league, and he's yep. obviously French. So he played their national team guy. But I have to say, like, and maybe you can comment on this, because I don't know him personally, just played against him. But yep. for like a French guy to go, like, I think he played in Finland before and then, like, came to Germany and, like, be a guy that had success, like, that was kind of rare for those guys. Like, they, not a lot of them would kind of leave their home country and mm-hmm. try something else. So
yeah, I don't really think I've played with many, like, France yeah. guys other than him. Like, usually, yeah, like you said, they kind of just stay in their own country and play in their own league and eat their croissants and baguettes and they're happy with that. But yeah, Toto was a great dude. Great family. He's got two boys and his wife. She's super nice too. And I think he's actually back in France now. I think we played him in Champions League. He was in Rouen at the start of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, he's a great guy. Loved him on and off the ice.
Oh, that's good to hear. I, like, obviously I was always happy when you saw someone from that league do well or go mm-hmm. somewhere. There was a goalie the 1 year that won, and then he went up going to Finland. So it was good for them. And then obviously the other guy, you know, someone who we know well, Tyler Gaudette. So
yeah,
Gods, you end up spending one year with him. Yeah.
One year there. Yeah. And then this year here too. And I mean, Gods is one of my best friends in pro hockey. We get along very well. I mean, his wife and my girlfriend are pretty much inseparable now in Mannheim too. They're constantly doing stuff together. We both have dogs, so they're dog walking. My girlfriend had to buy a cold tub, so they're cold tubbing in the backyard every day, having coffees. I mean, that was another reason too, is that to come here. I mean, obviously this place is an incredible organization, but to be able to come here and have those two people that we already knew, as well as Swarzy, mm-hmm. Just made my life and Meg's life so much easier.
And speaking of Meg, like, I don't know how long you guys have been on this journey together, but it'd be cool for her as well to kind of be following you, whether, like, was she coming when you started out in Europe, or you guys started dating later? Like, how did it work that way?
So actually that summer that we had kind of like the Atlantic bubble in COVID,
yeah.
We were allowed to travel all over the Maritime. So me and my buddies, we took like a 5-day vacation to Newfoundland. And that was actually where I met her, and then kind of just kept in touch. And then the year I went to Riga, we were still, you know, talking all the time and whatnot. And then that summer I went back home we hung out more, and then she ended up moving to Halifax, which is about 2 hours away from Moncton. Saw her more, and then came over to Wolfsburg for the first season. She visited a few times, and then that next summer we moved in together, and you know, been living together ever since.
But it's also like, it must be cool for her, obviously. You know, if she didn't meet you or mm-hmm. get in this relationship with you, you know, she might not be able to see these countries and travel around like she has been. So
yeah, so she actually was lucky as well. When she went to Memorial University, it's in Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. So she did an exchange her last year.
Oh, okay.
She was she went to Ireland. So she went to school in Dublin. And then it was her and her best friend. So while she was here, you know, on weekends or whatnot, they would travel around. So she got to see a lot of Europe. But I mean, that was doing school as well and kind of traveling on a budget.
Yeah.
But now she's working. She works remote, so it's a little bit more cash inflow coming in, so we can get to do a little bit more when we get these breaks and stuff.
She definitely would have learned how to drink beer in Ireland.
Oh yeah, I mean, and coming from Newfoundland, they can guzzle some beers too. So yeah, she knows her way around a couple of drinks.
The bartender's like, no, not her again.
Yeah, get the hell out, kick her out of here.
That's funny. And obviously you guys have a dog together, as you mentioned.
Yep.
Lukey. Yeah.
Lukey. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
How old is he?
He's 4. He's a golden doodle.
So he's been traveling around.
Yeah.
Do you ever get nervous putting him on the plane, or does he?
Yeah.
Come on?
I mean, we both hate it. We actually this summer tried to do like a service dog course with him, but Canada's gotten so strict with it, 'cause I think people were just trying to take advantage of it too much. So you need like an actual like psychiatrist note to say you have.
Yeah.
Some sort of disability or whatever it is. But we're actually pretty lucky that there's a seasonal flight from Halifax direct to Frankfurt. So it's like a 2 hour drive for us to Halifax. And then it's only like a 5 hour flight from Halifax to Frankfurt. So we put him under for that, which isn't too bad. But then when we go back home, we'll fly from Frankfurt to Montreal. And then last year we drove from Montreal rather than have him fly stuck in his crate and then back on a flight. Especially flying to the East Coast, it's such a pain in the ass. Like the flight times are either early in the morning or late at night. So him being in his crate all day would just be, I wouldn't feel good about doing that to him. So we just bit the bullet and drove home after that. It was only 10 hours. So we'll probably end up doing something like that again this year. But yeah, I mean, putting him under is very sad. You put him in his crate and then you watch them like wheel him away and he's just looking out at you. Like it's pretty shitty feeling. But I mean, he's fine in there. We give him... I think it's called Trazodone. It's kind of like a relaxer for him. So he just chills in there, throws a couple toys in with him, and
I'd be bawling my eyes out.
Yeah, it sucks, but I mean, he's fine. He's a big boy. He'll be all right.
Yeah. Oh, good. Glad he can be on this this journey for you. Yeah. So this brings me to a fan question. They wrote in before the show. You're a big fantasy football guy.
Oh yeah.
Sources have told me, you can confirm or deny, that you may not have been the best GM this year in terms of trades.
Yeah, I fucked up big time, but
yeah, no.
Everyone thought I gave Swizzy the league, but hey, he ended up losing in the finals, so the trade's all right. But yeah, I gave up Christian McCaffrey for Jahmyr Gibbs and a couple other guys. James Cook. Honestly, I got pretty good value out of what the guys I got back, but I mean, giving up Christian McCaffrey is a bit of a not the best play, but I mean, finished third place. Swizzy finished second. So,
are you in one league with Swizz or two?
Two leagues with Swizzy.
Okay, good. Because this now I can say this because he said he waxed you in both.
Yeah,
he when did. He went head to head. So
fucker, yeah. And the league that we're in, it's actually a bunch of Belleville guys.
Yeah.
That league I went completely all in this year. Like it's a keeper league, so I have zero draft picks next year. Like I don't know what I'm going to do, but yeah, he waxed me in that one. Then the next week he waxed me in our team one here. So he's got the bragging rights right now. And he actually went back-to-back championships in the Belleville one
as
the 8th seed too. So back-to-back years, he's knocked off the first place and won 2 chips. But
yeah, that's what he was telling me that kind of today, that he went 8-1 against you and knocked you off.
Absolutely waxed me, but
it's all right. We learn from our...
Live and you learn, man.
You live and you learn. Next year...
Don't give up all your draft picks for fucking Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb. Cowboys will always let you down.
I don't know anything about football, but I just know that the Cowboys will let you down.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny. And something that we've kind of, just off topic from hockey, that we've kind of enjoyed together is Call of Duty.
Hell yeah.
COD Squad. Yeah, like what's, like, me, my game was always NHL.
Yeah.
I played that since probably like NHL 94 on the Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
you know, it's Call of Duty. Would you say that's always kind of been your game and like something you look forward to every year?
Oh yeah. I mean, I love when that game comes out. The past few haven't been the best, but this year we have a pretty good crew and it's a great game. But I mean, like I said, Meg works, so, and she works North American hours, so it's 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. So there's lots of times in the afternoon where I know myself and yourself aren't doing anything with your wife and my girlfriend working. So it's
No, I'm very busy working. You need
Yeah, he's super busy trying to capture B. But we get on, we play 3 or 4 hours of COD, and it's a great pass. I'm kill some hours.
Yeah, we get on the front line, that's for sure. Yeah, I do take pride in not being the worst. Who would you say, we need to get this on record, who would you say in our squad is the worst?
I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but Gods is pretty good. When Swizzy hops on, he's not too bad. It's Cutthroat playing on split screen, but I don't know. I don't want to say.
You were big Tex. Yeah. I would like to think we have our moments. Yeah,
everyone has their moments.
No, but you are obviously one of the better. You're probably the best guy, I would say, like in the group. You're probably the most consistent guy throwing up 30, 40 kills. Me and Tex are either getting killed 40 times and having like 10 kills, or we put up like 30 and then die 29. So that's about
it. Hey, as long as you're having fun and we get the wins, who cares?
I haven't punched my table as much as I do when I in Chell, but my wife still sometimes is like, this isn't even NHL. Like, why are you getting so frustrated? I'm like, I'm not. I'm having fun.
This is so much fun. Down here just fucking screaming my head off.
It's relaxing.
Yeah. I feel super great doing this. I'm so relaxed. I haven't blinked for 4 hours just staring at my TV.
Just controllers really soaked, just sweating.
Yeah, just squeezing it as tight as I can.
No, it's fine. It's good to have a passion outside of hockey. But back to kind of you. Like, how long do you see yourself playing for?
Honestly, until they won't pay me anymore. I love playing hockey. It's so much fun. I mean, I tell the boys here, like, sometimes guys will ask, like, are you going to play hockey when you're done? Like, I can't wait to join my buddies in the industrial fourth division beer league back home and playing it Tuesday nights at, like, 10 p.m. and then drinking beers after. Like, I just love hockey, and I love being around, like, the guys. And, I mean, I could never see myself working at a desk. Like, I would probably go crazy. So, I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do after hockey, but I mean, I love the game. I think we're extremely lucky to be a part of this game. I mean, you're playing a game for a living, like, doesn't get much better. Now, obviously we're not making what the guys in the NHL are making, but I mean, we're still making a great living. I mean, we're getting to travel the world. We're living in Europe. I mean, I don't think I would ever live in Europe for any other reason than playing hockey. And, I mean, till they say you're not getting a contract anymore, that's how long I want to play.
That's a good answer. And I tell everyone to play as long as you can, like, as long as either your body will let you, as you said, they'll keep paying you, or like if it's a family decision.
Yeah.
Play as long as you can, because you guys aren't making, you know, millions like in the NHL, but you're still making good money where you can live comfortably. And it also sets you up for after hockey, where you have, you know, when you join the workforce, you're obviously not going to start right away of what guys like yourself and other guys make in this league right off the bat. And I just tell them, like, do it as long as you can, man, because when you're done, even if you know you're done, you'll still miss playing. But you kind of said it there, like, you're not sure what you would do after, but if you thought about anything, would it be something with your degree, or do you want to stay maybe in coaching or something? Like,
I don't know. You see how much effort and time these coaches put in. Like, I don't know if I really have that in me to be at the rink. I mean, I love being at the rink and not, I mean, putting in the work on the ice and in the gym, that's completely fine. But then to go watch all the video and, you know, to critique guys and stuff like that, I don't really know if I have that in me. But my goal is, What I would like to do is, there's an air traffic control base in Riverview, which looks after it's like pretty much all of the Maritimes into Quebec, and then down a bit of the east coast of the States. So that would be my number one goal, is to try to get into that, to be an air traffic controller. I have one of my best friends, him and his dad are both air traffic controllers, so I've talked to them about it, and if, you know, they would have any, you know, kind of pull in order to try to help me get onto that. Obviously there's like some testing and stuff you have to do, and some cognitive tests you have to pass. But that is my, like, what I have right now planned, but I mean, that would be, it's kind of, I think it would be difficult to get into, but also they have a World Air Traffic Control hockey games every year. It's like, so it's like an international tournament. So I think having that pro hockey background might be able to help that out a little bit. But I mean, that's my goal right now. And I've never been the best test taker. So who knows if I'll be able to pass that test, but that's the goal right now.
They don't ask how many you fail, just did you pass?
You passed them, so exactly.
But that's kind of like a lot of guys when they're done playing, they either go be like police, police officers or firemen, because they have those leagues or rivalries where they will take, they'll kind of bump those pro guys up because they need them for their team.
Exactly,
so, but that's an interesting answer. I've actually never heard anyone say that's what they want to do. Like, is that something when it comes to like the tests and maybe the, like a little bit of learning before, like, is that something that takes a while? Like, for, I'll give an example, like in hydro, like Hydro One or those big companies, like when you do your apprenticeship, it's like 4 years and you learn everything and then you get placed somewhere. But
yeah, you're like on the lines.
But like, so for this, like air traffic control, like would you?
So it's honestly, it kind of reminds me of, like, I've done a couple online, like they have like the practice test, and it honestly reminds me a bit of like the concussion tests that we do. Like it'll test your reaction time and like kind of your ability to deal with stress.
Okay.
Because you are on the job, you're talking
to pilots
and you're telling, you know, if you have to go up this, like this 1,000 feet, or you have to come down 1,000 feet. So you do have to think pretty quickly on your feet. So the testing has a lot to do with that. And then if you pass the test, you get pushed on into like the course. And I think the course is 2 years, but you're getting paid while you're doing it. And then once you pass that course, then you can either become an air traffic controller, which in that case, you're talking to the pilots. And you know, I think they work, like my buddy will work like an 8 hour shift, and they work for an hour, then they'll have like a 30 minute break. Then they'll work for an hour, then they'll have like a 30 minute break. And just cause they don't want them constantly working, cause you do have to be relatively alert.
Yeah.
And then there's another department where you're basically kind of like a weatherman for like the airports, where like you're talking to the people at the airport saying, you know, it's okay for them to fly today, or there's a storm coming in, maybe we have to like delay this plane a little bit, or just kind of stuff like that. Personally, I would like to become the air traffic controller rather than the
weatherman,
the weather guy. But I mean, either or would be good. And like I said, the base for it is literally in my hometown. Like one of my best friends growing up, it's in his backyard. So it's super close to home, good paying job. They have great benefits, good pension.
So you would only be placed there, like there's, or can you go to other ones too? Like if
yeah, I mean, that's the one there. So there's one in Riverview, New Brunswick, and then there's one in Gander, Newfoundland. Which is kind of like the middle of nowhere, Newfoundland. But I mean, if I had to go there, I mean, Meg's from Newfoundland, so it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But my first choice would be the Riverview. If I could get on there, that would be best case Ontario. But I mean, at that point, you don't really have much of a say if that's what you want to do. Go wherever they place you. But I would definitely be pushing to try to get onto the one in Riverview.
It's also just starting points too. Like, as I said, with the hydro guys, like a lot of them have destinations and every year they'll reapply for them, but they might get placed somewhere where
usually you start like in a remote area. And
my one buddy started up in like middle of nowhere for he was there for like 3 years and then finally got somewhere. But that's cool. The weatherman thing reminded me of Mean Girls. There's a 30% chance it's already raining. Just see Murray on the mic. Guys, I think it's raining, and they're like,
outside today.
That's funny. Okay, two more for you here. Yep. You've been very good with your time. Had some laughs. When you look back at your career, obviously it's still going here in Mannheim now, but did you think you would kind of have the career you've had when you look back on it?
No, not at all. I mean, getting cut from those two, like the mid to triple A team back-to-back years, I mean, at the time I was just like, whatever, like I'm going to play hockey for this team this year. But I mean, it did suck. And then playing midget that next year, and then every year I just took it 1 year at a time. Like, I've never been one to be like, I have to, you know, play on this team next year, or it's just like it's a failure. Like, it's just like 1 year at a time, just do your best. And then you know, kind of after junior going to the CIS, I didn't know if I'd ever have a career in pro hockey, and then just try to get better every single year and take it 1 year at a time. And then obviously going to UMB, that was the best situation for me. I played every situation there. Played around, I mean, our teams were pretty stacked, and there'd be years, the most games we lost when I was there was like 5 or 6 in a season. So you're constantly around that winning culture and just getting better every single day. Like, the way we practice there, it's the practices were 10 times harder than any game we played. So yeah, for me, it was just try to take it every year at a time and just, like I said earlier, just enjoy yourself. You're playing hockey. Back then, it wasn't really for a living. It was trying to get a degree, but now it's playing for a living, and I'm extremely grateful.
No, it's good to, hear. One funny thing that just came to my head we forgot to talk about was, I wanted to ask you, did you, when you had the league record or the league lead in penalties that one year in the DEL, did they send you a trophy or anything?
No, they didn't send me anything. They sent me, like, I don't know, the penalty box or something in Wolfsburg. It would have been nice to have that, but no, I think they count the tens here. I think I had like a couple tens. And then
I don't believe that. I can't believe you would get a 10
every now and again, but I also think like two games in a row, I got like a 5-minute major. Like I hit one guy from behind and then I think I hit Taro from behind too. So racked up the pimps pretty quickly that way. But no, they didn't send me anything. Kind of pissed off about it.
Maybe the league. We'll write to the league.
Yeah, I'll write them a letter.
From now on, like, just these guys want to get their rewards too.
Sure, they'd be happy to hear from me.
Jordan, good to hear from you again.
Yeah. This isn't a letter about why you shouldn't get suspended.
That'd be funny. All right, last one for you. What is one piece of advice or multiple piece of advice you would give your younger self? So if you're talking to Jordan Murray back when he was 16, 17 years old, what's one or multiple piece of advice you would give him? Or maybe if there's someone in, you know, your situation that you were in then, now listening, what's maybe some piece of advice you would give them?
I think for myself, it would probably be to take it a little bit more seriously when I was younger. Cause like I said, I was kind of taking it year at a time, but I, up until I was probably 25 going into my first year pro, like I didn't work out in the summer. Especially when I was in university, I had a job. Like I was a server at a seafood restaurant in Shediac, New Brunswick. It was right on the beach. Honestly, great spot to work at. But like I would work all day and then go home, and I wasn't going to the gym or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I wish I kind of took it a bit more seriously and kind of maybe bought in a little bit earlier. But I mean, I have no regrets. I'm very happy with what I've done and hopefully be happy with what I'll continue to do. But yeah, that would be the biggest thing, is maybe take it a little bit more seriously at a younger age.
I mean, that's like, it's easy to say it now,
yeah,
because you can look back on it, but like when you were this age, and as you said, you're working a full-time job, and I've said this to many people, like I would rather get up at 5, go to the gym, than to do an 8 to 5 and then go to the gym after.
Yeah, yeah.
And also you were probably having success doing what you were doing. Doing
pretty much nothing. Yeah.
So you were like, why would I do more when it's working, you know?
And like I said, I don't have any regrets, because I've had a ton of great times. I've met a ton of great people, and you know, lots of great stories, lots of great memories, and like I'll cherish those for forever. And whatever, if I didn't go to the gym for a couple of years and I got to have those fun times instead, it's definitely worth it.
Hey man, you still made it. You got to play in the KHL. Yeah. In Germany, Sweden, yeah, Everywhere. So play in the AHL. Maybe that was the key. Maybe we shouldn't work out as much as all these people are telling us to do.
Don't take that advice. Get in the gym, boys. Get in the gym.
I'm just kidding. But no, man, I appreciate you taking the time. It was cool to kind of go down memory lane with you. Obviously, you know, we had some laughs, and you know, going to be waiting to hear you on the mic when you're done playing hockey. You know, if I'm ever on a flight, I'm going to be listening on a pilot.
Yeah, my buddy Andrew Hare is here. No, but yeah, thanks for having me here. Yeah, really appreciate it, man, and love what you're doing.
Thanks, man. And for those listening, give us a follow. You can see it on YouTube live now, as I said. It's on every streaming platform. Until next week, cheers and ciao.